day 4 on the Radio Cafe of the spring, or almost spring, fun drive. And we are asking you to call 428-1393 if you haven't done so already and make a contribution to this station. I would like to welcome Peter Grendel. He's general manager of The Screen, which is the wonderful cinema on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we're going to be talking to one of the filmmakers who is going to be presenting his work, his incredible work. And I've got an interview that I recorded yesterday with him that we're going to play in just a moment. But and his name is Phil Grabsky. He's made these films In Search of Mozart, In Search of Beethoven, In Search of Haydn. And he's still searching. He's going to be searching for Chopin and Bach
Chopin's
in the future.
Next.
Right. But you are the general manager of The Screen. And I want you, as a cinema director, to ask our audience and explain to our audience why it would be a good thing for them right now to call 428-1393 before we hear from Phil Grabsky.
Well, because you can't hear from Phil without calling that number. And if you appreciate everything we do here as a community, as a small little tiny Santa Fe community, then giving, of course, every single penny that you have ever earned to the public radio station is really where it's at.
Or that you've earned, let's say, between 3 and 4 yesterday afternoon.
3 and 4 yesterday afternoon, that would be most appreciated. And, I mean, you know, one of the most special things about Santa Fe, you know, I meet a lot of people like myself who came out here on kind of a whim and said, you know, I came out here almost 11 years ago just for the film industry specifically, and found this odd little niche of a city that is really on a little tiny weird map of its own, almost in a bubble of sorts, and that's Santa Fe. And Albuquerque's got nothing like it. Taos, well, is not quite all the way there. And other cities in New Mexico and surrounding states really just can't hit what Santa Fe has. I've been trying
to put Taos has this amazing high definition theater now.
Right, right, which is that's right. And
they're awesome.
And was it Los Alamos or Roswell, or maybe both got a new one too? Big fat 16.
Albuquerque's
like that.
Got these IMAX. Yeah, I mean, but Santa Fe, it's an unusual place. And Santa Fe Public Radio.
Right, right. So you know, you look at the state of art out here, and it's absolutely impeccable, and the state of community as well. And it's something that just kind of draws you in, because there's nothing as unique as your neighbors who run, you know, a radio show or run a cinema or run a cute little cafe or something like that. And, you know, the fortunate thing, which is also the desperate thing about all of this stuff, is that there's no corporate backing for anybody.
That's right.
There's no billionaire sitting here saying, hey, Mary Charlotte, go talk about Santa Fe's art scene, you know. Go talk about what's happening this weekend that, you know, well, we can go to Fandango and figure it out pretty easily. But if we really want to brighten our lives and do what we actually love to do here in this city, the reason I stayed, the reason most of the people I know here live here, it's for stuff that we talk about here today, that I want listen to your show and you highlight and these types of things, and I couldn't get those resources or that news or that underground, you know, non-tourist info anywhere else. But
thank you so much. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And Peter Grendel is the general manager of The Screen. Now, you have a really beautiful theater over there.
Thank you.
I mean, good sound system, nice seats.
Yeah.
The front seat, if you sit in the front row, your nose is not rubbing
it
against the
suck,
screen.
Right, right, right. Well, that was the mission, you know, like you guys, you know, we're looking to do something community-based that outreaches to the people who live here, hopefully a couple tourists every now and then, but in the end, something that combats static. Not to say anything terrible about corporations, but a corporate mentality that might just churn them out. You know, all the biggest movies are made by, you know, five companies straight up. So
right.
your big 300 releases a year are made by five people,
right.
Five guys who say yes and no, and they control your culture. You know,
and they're looking for pitches like
right.
It's The Wizard of Oz meets Casablanca.
Okay, are you ready? Yeah, in a computer. Okay, you know, I saw this thing the other day that said it was a review for something that's coming out this week in a caveman animation. It said it's like Avatar only animated, and I said Avatar was animated, people. Okay, there's nothing real about it. So our mission, like your mission, is to give somebody something else to play music, to do things that you can't see everywhere else, that you have to uniquely find out about with the help of a curated experience, something that Netflix can't provide, something that the Regal can't provide, but that we handpick our movies every week. We play, we open one thing every Friday, we have one screen, and we give all the respect we can to every single movie we can.
428-1393. Peter Grendel, who is sitting with us, has generously offered a whole bunch of pairs of tickets to the screen, which is on the Santa Fe University of Art and Design campus, formerly known as the College of Santa Fe. So if you call right now and make a modest contribution to 428-1393 KSFR, you can get a pair of those tickets. We're going to go now to hear Phil Grabsky, whom, as I mentioned, I interviewed the other day, and we will be back in a few minutes. And while he starts talking, please give us a call, 428-1393.
I'd like now to introduce filmmaker Phil Grabsky. His documentaries include In Search of Mozart, In Search of Beethoven, In Search of Haydn, and Leonardo Live. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
So how did you start making the In Search of films? Were you responding to or maybe even making up for some of the things that were missing in the existing films on great composers?
It's a slightly more strange genesis than that, actually. I had been making a film in Afghanistan, and my family said, for the next project, could you do something a bit nearer home? And my wife took me to see a Mozart opera. And frankly, during those 3 hours, I started asking lots of questions to myself about just who was he? How could this opera house still be full? You know, with tickets costing whatever, $150 each, and it was still full. Where did his creativity come from? I mean, I'd seen Amadeus as a kid, and and loved it as a film. But you know, I knew it was a Hollywood film, and albeit shot in Prague. But I have the advantage, I suppose, that I film things myself. So I thought, well, I'll go and find the best historians, the best musicians, the best orchestras, and ask them. And I'll go to as many of the places that he lived and traveled and played and performed in and get a sense of his life and try and piece it all together. I didn't realize quite how hard that would be, but I absolutely loved the journey. But that's why it's called In Search Of, because it was a genuine search on my part. I didn't write the script and then go and try to fill in, the visual gaps. I went off genuinely searching to find the real Mozart, if you like.
Well, one of the amazing things about these films is the access you got to scholars and conductors and musicians and orchestras, and not only access, but they're speaking to you in such a natural way as if you were long friends with them. How did you do that?
Do you know, it's when I look back at the films now and I see the cast list, I mean, I was very lucky. You know, part of it is that, traditionally these kind of films are made for television where it takes you about 5 years to get a commission, and then they want it in 3 months because they've suddenly realized there's an anniversary coming. That's not the best way to make films. The best way to make films is take your time. It takes time to gain the trust of Emmanuel Ax or Daniel Barenboim or whoever it might be. And then you have to coincide. These are not well-funded projects, or at least, it's hard to raise the money for them. So you can't really pay these musicians great deal, and in fact, what could you pay them? So you have to ask them to do you a favor, and generally speaking, they'll say, look, we like your project, we're happy for you to film, but you need to coincide when we're actually performing that particular piece in a concert. That could be 12 months away. So on the one hand, you have to be patient and prepared when you actually go to film. I think the second part of your question about the way in which they behave on camera, I've made films about, Muhammad Ali and Pele and great commanders, and so, worked in all sorts of spheres, military, sporting, soccer. I don't think I've ever met such genuinely nice people as in the world of classical music. There's some theories why that might be, but I think that what I found is that, first of all, I'm turning up on my own, so there's not a whole big crew laying cables and making their lives complicated, and then they've waited around for an hour, and then you say, come on in, act natural. I can start filming relatively quickly, and then I'm engaging in a genuine conversation. I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say. They are, I think, to be a great musician, you have to be, on their part, genuinely passionate about about the work, about what they do. And also, I often knew more about the biography in some ways than they did, so they were asking me questions. And, you know, I'm filming. So I'm kind of filming this genuine conversation. That said, I was forever impressed by the articulacy of... I mean, Renée Fleming, I remember going to the Paris Opera to film her, and she talked to me for about an hour and 10 minutes, and every single answer I could have used in the film.
Right.
Leif Ove Antnes, a Norwegian pianist, another one. I mean, so many of them. The real challenge for me was editing down what they'd said. They were very articulate. And, of course, where it's best is when they actually talk about a particular piece and then play a little piece on the piano and say, look, you can see how this is different to how somebody else would have played it. But it is a long process, but it's a rewarding one.
I love those moments. They seem, maybe some people would think that they were didactic, but you learn so much just in these little moments where they play something on the piano the way Mozart wrote it when he was 7 years old and how somebody else would have written it. And they're so insightful. And meanwhile, the way you're filming it, I mean, there's a lot of real close-ups on the musicians' hands and on their instruments and on the vibrating strings of the stringed instruments and on the faces. And it really feels, I mean, it's the films themselves are, I guess, your work of art, the way you're doing it.
Well, I mean, in some sense, that's very kind of you, but I mean, in some senses, I'm trying to be absent. I'm trying to put you, the viewer, the audience, to give you a sense of the privileged position that I'm in by being right next to them. I've been so fortunate to be right in the middle of some of the world's greatest orchestras, and I'm trying to share that. Now, sometimes, of course, you need the wide shot from the back of the hall up in the circle, but really what you don't get to see too much is you're standing next to the conductor, you're standing next to the first violinist, or some of these great cellists or soloists, other instruments. And that's why also the interviewees look straight at the camera. Again, they're having a conversation with you. Yeah. Because people shouldn't be afraid of classical music. I mean, even today, I mean, I've just flown into the United States, and in my taxi, I don't think he even realized, but his mobile phone was a few notes of Beethoven. I mean, these composers, in my opinion, are examples of what we as mankind are capable of, you know, the great creative achievements. I've just finished a film about Manet, the artist, and he's the same. And I think, you know, it's worth an hour and a half, 2 hours of your time to really get a sense of somebody like Mozart, somebody like Beethoven. Their music is so extraordinary, and it can be just as powerful to an 18-year-old as an 80-year-old. No matter who you are, this is a fascinating life story. What makes Mozart even more interesting, of course, is that many of us got our information from the film Amadeus, which is full of inaccuracies. And that, in fact, Mozart's life is actually more interesting than the story that Amadeus puts forward. Beethoven is slightly different in the sense that most people think Beethoven was, you know, old and miserable. And, you know, and a lot of that comes from one late portrait of this kind of slightly fierce, grumpy-looking, white-haired man. That, again, only tells a very, very small part of the story. You know, he was very young, very handsome, full of love, full of optimism. And ultimately what this is all about is that you can listen to their music and appreciate it, but actually, if you understand the biography, understand the period, why they're writing these pieces, who's paying for them, and what the historical context is, the importance of Napoleon to Beethoven, for example, I actually think it makes the music even more exciting, even more impactful.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I mean, when you watch these films, I had such a vivid sense watching them of the trajectory of these artists' lives, and you go chronologically, which is wonderful for the viewer, and it seems that their lives were so difficult, and no matter how talented somebody is, then or now probably, they don't necessarily get the rewards or the recognitions until after they're gone, unless they're really good business people.
Well, that was one of the real eye-openers for me, actually. I hadn't realized at all how important commerce and business was for these guys. Mozart basically never wrote a piece of music unless he was paid for it, unless it was a commission, unless he was told to by his employer. we imagine these composers kind of alone in their loft, and they've got their piano, and they're getting messages from God, and it's kind of spewing out of them like a computer. It really wasn't like that. They are business people. Mozart, some of his most famous piano concertos, he's hired the hall, he's selling the tickets, he's employing beautiful girls that he finds on the street to go and sell the tickets, and then he thinks, you know, I need to have a piece of music to play. And the audiences in those times didn't want to hear something they'd heard before. It always had to be a new piece, almost always performed by the composer themselves. So he has to write, in a very short period of time, something that we now think of as one of the greatest piano concerti ever. Other pieces he's writing because he's making his money as a piano teacher. I'm currently making a film about Chopin, half of Chopin's life. He's a piano teacher, and it's only really in the summers when he goes south of Paris that he writes some of the, you know, the famous pieces that we now know. I found that whole kind of economic context very important to understanding them, as it still is. I mean, I spend half my life dealing in contracts and sales and just trying to, you know, raise some funds to make these films. It's very, very hard. And the other area, which is, I think, applies to whoever you are, is having that sheer, single-minded determination to be the very best that you can be. None of them wanted to be, you know, it wasn't that they wanted to be rich and famous or win lots of awards or be given medals. What they wanted was to be respected as a great composer, as a great performer. But almost more than that was just to see how far they could go with their talent. And that means that, you know, when they turned up after long journeys in Mannheim or Augsburg or Prague or Vienna, they didn't go and have dinner and go to bed. They went out straight away, first night. They'd go to a concert hall. They'd go to an opera house. They'd listen. They'd make notes. They'd go backstage. They'd talk to the singer. They'd ask all of them. Haydn, Mozart, Chopin, Beethoven were like that. And as I said, you know, now I'm doing artists like Manet and Vermeer. They're the same. It's about pushing their abilities as far as they possibly could. And that's fantastic for us now to kind of share in and try to convey in a film.
We're talking to filmmaker Philip Grabsky.
And you're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and we are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, and the telephones have been quiet. So we would like you to really give a call to 428-1393, and you can get a pair of tickets. And are the tickets valid for the upcoming shows of In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven?
Sure, why not? You know what? Let's do it. How much are we having to donate for one of these?
For a pair of tickets, I think it's, you can ask your phone volunteers, I think it's about $45. Or if you get a sustaining membership where you contribute monthly, you can also get a pair of tickets.
If you go get one of these pairs of tickets, we will, yes, make them good for any cinema show at the screen for the next year. And if you would like to make those cinema shows this weekend for Phil Grabsky's visitations to the screen, we can do that too.
Now, when are these visitations?
Visitations, yes. We're doing a big fat Phil Grabsky weekend. He might be in town right now. He might be arriving later tonight. But he will definitely be at the screen tomorrow night for a double feature of In Search of Mozart, which was his first big In Search of ... film. He's now, of course, done this large, massive series of these things. He followed it up with In Search of Beethoven.
Which is also going to be screened.
Yes, so it's a double feature. We have In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven back-to-back with Phil Grabsky and an intermission in the middle. All right, it all starts tomorrow night at the screen at 7 o'clock. Now, most normal people will have to pay $20 flat for that ticket, but if you donate to KSFR right now, you get that ticket and you feel good about yourself and you help public radio.
For two people, not
for
just
two
one.
Whole people. That's
two
right.
Whole
two
entire whole people. Uncut people.
All right, and that would typically be $40. Right. So $5 more goes to KSFR. We love it.
428-1393 is the number. And I forgot to set our goal at the beginning, but we would like to make this a $1,000 morning.
Yes.
So we would like to make our $1,000 by the end of this hour. So call in with a contribution of any size. Heck, you can make a contribution of $100 and get several pairs, a couple of pairs of tickets that can be used any time during the year 2013 to go to Films at the Screen. And Lord knows there's fantastic films there all the time. 428-1393. 428-1393. Now, you have wonderful students working as your staff at the screen.
Yes. We are in an interesting, wonderful position, actually, that we're this independent cinema on the campus of the Santa Fe University, that we do the first run, the art house, the independent, the foreign, the underground, the stuff you can't see anywhere else. We are beholden to the students. It's our duty that also go to the university there to give them a job straight up. So we don't hire any staff from outside Santa Fe. Sorry, folks. So we hire completely 100% in-house for film students that are actually on the campus there. So
who are, of course, passionate film students.
Yes. Now, that's the requirement. And I have a very interesting position that we train from 0 to 100, you know. We'll make you 100% after we're done with my good... you know, Peter Grindel trademarked training sessions here. And he's showing
me the whip. No.
Right, the whip, right. Yes. You leave a hardened ex-con after the screen, right? We start you at, you know, all that's required is a passion for film and a good work ethic to work at the theater. So everyone you see, with the exception of myself, at the screen is a current film student in the Santa Fe University's film program, who's currently trying to learn about film, make their own films, produce their own films, work in the New Mexico film industry, whatever it is. And, you know, working at the screen is this wonderful little experience that not only do you get to see this side of American film going that's, you know, uniquely American in the sense it's community built. It's powered by, you know, your literal, you know, $10 tickets, your $2 popcorns, whatever it is. And you're not just supporting your local independent theaters. You're supporting your own education and your intellect, all right?
428-1393. I hear that the phones are actually doing some ringy-dinging, and we thank you for that. Let's keep it going because we're trying to make $1,000 during this hour by 9 o'clock. So we've got another half an hour to accomplish that, and it can be done.
It can be done.
And are there young people who, you know, your students, for example, who are listening to KSFR, who are listening to public radio?
Absolutely, actually. That's the interesting thing is you'd never think, you know, so many people say, your crowds are 70% seniors or whatnot. And while this is true, and we love and appreciate our very wise seniors, and that's why they come to our theater, is my personal opinion, is the wiser you get, the more appreciative of art you get.
Yep.
That's why we like to support everybody out there. But, you know, 30% is not, okay? And the last time I was on this show, actually, I was, you know, I also teach film at the university's film department, too. And one of my students, you know, he was a 19-year-old freshman, and he raised his hand to be in a class. He said, "I heard you on KSFR the other day." And I said, did you donate anything? And he said, "I don't have any money, man." But, you know, he has no job and so on.
He could be working for you.
That's right. That's right. But you never know.
428-1393. And we ask all people, young, old, and everything in the middle, to contribute to KSFR right now. And as I like to say, if you make whatever you make per hour, why don't you give 1 hour's worth of wages before taxes to KSFR? So if you are in some fabulous job and you're making $250 an hour, give us $250. If you have a big, huge trust fund, give us $250. If you are making the Santa Fe minimum wage of $10.50 an hour, how about $10.50? Just a one-time contribution of $10.50, because when you think about what this station does for you, I think it's probably worth it. What do you think, Peter?
Potentially.
Grindel?
You know, just a little bit out there. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm one of those, you know, it's 8 a.m., it's a bit of a commute. You go to work, you crack open that radio.
That's
and
right.
I could listen to a ton of commercials for Starbucks, and I could change the channel. I could go over to KSFR and actually, like, feel good about myself, you know?
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And we're going to go back to Phil Grabsky in a moment and talk about In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven. And also, let's just mention, on Saturday night,
yes,
he's made another film, which we're going to talk about in a moment, called Leonardo Live. It's about Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm. And this is why I call it the Phil Grabsky Weekend. Not only is he doing this double feature Friday night, but also Saturday night, 7 o'clock p.m., for a cheaper ticket, because it's only one movie instead of two, we're doing $10 flat tickets for Leonardo Live, which is his new documentary about this art opening, where all these Leonardo paintings that have never been together ever in their lives, okay, one place.
And that is on Saturday night. And I just got a notice that the ALH Foundation has made a challenge of $300. So if anybody gives $300 or three people give $100 or six people give whatever math you want to do on that, that will be matched one-to-one up to $300. So I think we can make our $1,000 challenge by 9 o'clock this morning. But let's go for it and get the phones ringing, 428-1393. And if you've got a landline and you're calling from out of area, it's 1-866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. Peter Grendel and I are sitting here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, and we'll go back to Phil Grabsky now.
One of the things that you just said I find very interesting, which is that everybody who heard them wanted to hear something new. This was before recorded music. We love hearing the same things over and over again.
Yeah.
It's odd.
It's very different. Again, it just helps to contextualize what's happening here. It's a very different environment. First of all, just about at the beginning of publishing of music. Now, that's important to understand. I mean, Beethoven's first published piece is a trio for three instruments, obviously. Now, why is that? Well, because there's a growing demand in middle class, if you like, or slightly more wealthy homes to have written down music so people can play at home. There's no television at home. There's no iPods and all the rest of it. Recorded music, as you say, radio, none of that exists. So what people did at home, if they could afford to, was they played music. Well, it tended to be solo music or duets, trios, quartets. So then they need music to perform. So that creates a demand. Therefore, you find Beethoven, Chopin, people like this, writing music for 1, 2, 3, 4 instruments. So the publishing is starting to grow, and that's, you know, that has an impact on the way that they do things. Similarly, if Mozart or Beethoven received, I mean, the famous Ninth Symphony for Beethoven was a commission from London. In fact, he was commissioned to write two, the Ninth and the Tenth, but he never got to the Tenth. So all those things, I mean, concerts themselves were different. I mean, we imagine some of these symphonies, which we now know of as being three or four coherent movements. Well, a concert in those days, you might play the first movement, then a singer might come on, then there might be a piano concerto, then they might play the second movement. People were talking, people were eating chicken, you know, people were making a noise. And again, there are some, I can think of specifically in Beethoven's case, in Haydn's case, where they would write music deliberately to shut the audience up. There's one famous moment in Haydn where he goes very, very quiet and he makes a really loud noise. Where in that case he was worried that people needed to be, you know, woken up if they were dozing. Beethoven does something different where he starts a symphony really, really quietly so the audience have to stop talking to hear that the orchestra has started. So it was a very different world that these composers were working in. And most of the time they had to be there, as I say. But again, it starts to change in this period. What is really the classical music period, where all of a sudden, because of publishing, then you have Haydn's music being played in London, Mozart's music being played in Paris. That's starting to happen. By and large, though, these pieces were not heard very often at all, and certainly there was nothing recorded. I mean, if you didn't go to a concert hall to hear them or a fancy house, you wouldn't have heard it at all.
Right. Now, let's talk about Leonardo Live, the other film that's going to be shown here in Santa Fe. And it was originally made on the occasion of the 2011 Leonardo da Vinci exhibition at the National Gallery in London. It's a very different kind of film than the music films. Tell us about the process of making this documentary.
I think it comes out, I mean, it developed out of the In Search of films. On the one hand, that desire on my part to explore great creativity and share that with an audience that I know are interested, because I know how enthusiastic the audience are when they see these films. It also came out of the fact that I could see that people liked going to the cinema to see classical music, and I thought, and I was making art shows for television, and I thought, you know what, some of these art shows deserve to be in the cinema. partly that these days, you know, television doesn't really fulfill its, what I would call its public service moral obligation to bring art to people, but also it's actually better in the cinema, frankly.
Right.
And these days, the quality of the screens is such, the quality of the projectors is such, you know, it's a fantastic place to see art. Now, what we did, first of all, was we did, I was lucky, I got access, well, I know the National Gallery in London, and I went to them, told them I wanted to do a film about an exhibition for the cinema, and they said, well, you're in luck, because we're about to do one on Leonardo. There had never been as many Leonardos in one building. It'll never happen again. It took us 2 years to kind of build up to it, just getting the rights, getting the access, deciding how we were going to film it, getting the guests who were going to talk about the paintings. I worked with a fantastic distribution company who also do the Met Opera and the International Theatre Live shows, and they were, you know, fully supportive of this. So back in November 2011 in the UK, we did a live show from the National Gallery, which was the exhibition, background films about the paintings, background films about Leonardo. There was a presenter, there was actually two presenters and some expert guests. And then that was shown a couple of months later worldwide and actually reached 1,000 cinemas. It was a global first and, you know, phenomenally exciting. But, you know, that was really the trial. And so what we've now started is a brand called Exhibition. And we've launched it with three films. The first film is going to be Manet on April the 11th, and then after that comes Munch and Vermeer, and then there'll be hopefully three or four or five of these a year. And I think, again, it's just that even if you lived in London, you couldn't get a ticket to the Leonardo
right.
exhibition. Even if you live in London now, you can't get into the Manet exhibition. So 99.9% of the world's population cannot get to these exhibitions. Just as when I was a kid, I didn't live in London, and we didn't go to these exhibitions. And they are such fantastic works of art that I feel anyone should and certainly could be interested in. You know, with the kind of guide, the kind of person you'd like to be with if you were going around the gallery. So Leonardo, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity to see some of the greatest paintings ever painted on a big screen, and hear people explain who he was and what these paintings are. And as I say, moving forwards, I mean, it's not something I'm showing this week because the international premiere is April the 11th, but moving forwards, we're going to do more of these, with Manet being the first.
It's, I mean, as I was watching it, I was almost desperate to hear each speaker talk at more length and in more depth about Leonardo and their impressions. I guess it's a shorter format, and it's more like a live, I mean, it's called Leonardo Live, and it was at the time a live format, which is so different from the composer films.
Well, I think that's very perceptive of you, actually, and it's something that I'm sure will come up in the question and answer session that I do after the film. I think when we did it in November 2011, there was a sense, I mean, that one was funded by television. They're not now funded by television, but television basically said, we want it live. We want a live program on the day the exhibition opens. And that was exciting to do, but there are slight compromises by doing it live. I think one of them is that, you know, you spend a lot of time getting wonderful guests, but there's a bit of a temptation on a live show to not let them speak enough. One or two might find it slightly overwhelming, suddenly being live, thinking that there might be 1,000 cinemas in 20 countries. You know, I think there's an awful lot in Leonardo to really admire. I think it's a fantastic, you know, I'm proud of the film. But I think this kind of, you know, coincides with your thought, you know, moving forwards, we're not doing it live. You know, the Manet film is not a live film. We still filmed on the opening night. We got exclusive access. But we spent more time with guests. We allowed, you know, we could craft and edit in the same way as I do with In Search Of's. You know, I might do a 3-hour interview, a 2-hour interview. I'm only going to use 3 or 4 minutes. But it means you can use the very best bits and really craft it into the film.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that something like the Met Opera and NT National Theatre, they're fantastic being live because there's that sense of being present at the show, and it's very exciting, and I love going to them myself. I think for exhibition, we need that extra 4 or 6 weeks to really edit and craft and make sure that our filming of the paintings is absolutely perfect and in sync with what's been said about them. And so I think, you know, Leonardo is still worth watching because, you know, you're never going to see those kind of paintings in that kind of detail. And that includes a painting that no one had ever seen before. Salvatore Mundi had only just been agreed that it was a Leonardo. And that's on screen for the first time in that film.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that film on public television. Now, I wanted to ask you just a little question. Leonardo obviously has the stature of Mozart or Beethoven for visual art, and he was also a musician. And in the beginning of the film, there's a quotation from Leonardo that says something about how art is greater than music because it's not ephemeral like music. Did you put that in to amuse the people who have seen your films about composers?
No, I don't think so. It's a very interesting discussion. I mean, I remember reading a book by Simon Rattle where he says that every night when he performs, even if he's performing the same symphony, it's a new work of art. Whereas if you do a film, but if you do a painting, it is in a sense a fixed work of art. So I guess I was just getting people need to go to the cinema to be entertained. And then if you can educate them at the same time, so much the better. So you need to provoke people to start, you know, to be thinking, to be open to thinking about things rather than sitting back passively. Television, by and large, tends to just want to passively entertain. I think in the cinema, one can entertain and educate a little bit more, perhaps. So I think that's probably why I put that particular quote in. Maybe I was being a bit mischievous. To be honest, I can't remember.
We're talking to filmmaker Philip Grabsky.
And we're here at the Santa Fe Baking Company where things are heating up. 428-1393, 428-1393 is the number in the pledge room to make your telephone call and make a contribution to KSFR. And so, Peter Grendel, from the screen, you've been sitting here listening to Phil Grabsky.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Well, this is great because I've only exchanged emails with him thus far. And it's... Phil says, "How's the weather, Peter?" And I say, "Oh, it's bipolar right now. It's snowing yesterday, it's hot today." You know, but I've never actually gotten a chance to hear him talk about his work. I've been watching, you know, we played In Search of Haydn a couple years back, and it was this great little film. It's the first I ever heard of him.
And that was a blockbuster for you.
Oh, yeah. Go figure. This is why Santa Fe is this weird little mecca, I tell you, because In Search of Haydn, go figure, is a blockbuster, right? And I hear he's coming to town, and so we said, "Oh, absolutely, I'll play whatever you want, Phil." You know, of course. And so this is the first I've actually heard him talk about his work, and he's incredible. I mean, I can't wait for this Q&A tomorrow.
428-1393, and we are part of the way to our $1,000 goal for this hour, and the hour is going to be over in 15 minutes, so we gotta get on it, ladies and gentlemen. So 428-1393, and we've got some people to thank.
We do indeed. First of all, from right at the end of the news hour, Holland Flint called from Arroyo Seco.
Yay!
And she wanted to send a big shout out to BC, who does Blue Monday on Monday evenings.
Yes.
And then there's Michael and Melanie from Burning Books.
Yay, we love them.
And one person just said, "Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Great show."
Thank you very much.
And then there was Virginia.
Thank you, Virginia.
And Nancy Moline.
Yay, thank
and,
you all
and
of you.
And the Family Anonymous.
Ah, yes, the Anonymous family. They're very good artists. I've read about them in art history books. Anonymous. 428-1393 is the number. 428-1393. Make your pledge right now to KSFR. We really do have a $1,000 goal, which we're trying to meet by the end of the hour. And as I've said before, if you listen to the Radio Cafe on a daily basis, think about whether you would be willing to live without it and let it go. Because if you don't call, that's essentially what you're saying. Like, I like it, but I don't really care that much whether it's on the air or not. If that's the way you feel, don't call. But if you like it and you want it to stay on, just give a call. Just pledge whatever you can. It doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, I would rather have 50 phone calls, each giving $15, than one phone call giving a big contribution.
Absolutely.
Which, of course, is nice, too. But we want the listeners to call us.
Well, I tell you, we... you know, back, if anybody remembers their Santa Fe history from a couple of years ago, you know, the screen was threatened with a good old-fashioned shutdown. And it was a very chaotic, interesting moment in my life. And I was riding that horse till it died, you know. That was my plan. I was about a week away from unemployment, and all of a sudden, we started a fundraiser, I tell you. And we had some great big benefactors. All of you are still rock stars in my book, and anyone who's donated today, also a rock star in my book. But, you know, what really made up about 80% of the fundraiser that truly did save the screen a couple of years back were $1, $5 donations at the door from anyone who's buying a ticket, and then all of a sudden they'd say, oh, and here's a little extra for your fundraiser.
Wow, and that made a big difference.
80%. 80% was $1 and $5 donations. And people say, oh, it won't matter, but here's what I got. Oh, it won't matter, but here's what I got. Well, in the end, it mattered, let me tell you.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
428-1393. And we've got a bunch of passes left. Peter Grendel has very kindly donated, I think it was something like 10 passes of a pair of tickets.
Yes, 10 pairs.
10 pairs that you can use any time during the year 2013. And so just give a call, make a contribution, get basically a pair of tickets that you would buy full price anyway, get it for free, and make your contribution to KSFR. The number is, I think I just said it, but I'm going to say it again, 428-1393, and from out of area, it's 1-866-907-5737. Help us make that $1,000 goal by the end of this hour, and it's not, okay, it's starting to ring. I feel it and hear it, and I'm also getting texts from the control room that the phone is ringing. So let's get all the phones ringing. Get those phone volunteers going bananas. We like it when they're bananas. And we're going to go back to the last just couple of minutes of Phil Grabsky.
Now, having filmed, okay, Leonardo and Mozart and Beethoven and Haydn, made all these documentaries about each one of these, what, if anything, besides the fact that we call them geniuses today, do these figures have in common with one another?
Well, the things that struck me were the sheer hard work that goes into reaching that kind of position. And you see this mirrored today if you're a sportsman, if you're an Olympic runner, for example, or you're a baseball player. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're a journalist, if you have aspirations to be at the top of your field, you have to put an enormous amount of time into it. And maybe that's something that maybe a younger generation these days don't quite get. You know, we think that Mozart was somehow some kind of freak because he could play music and compose at such a young age. Well, he had something which is indefinable, of course, but he had a father who was one of the best teachers and violin players in Europe. Basically, all he did as a kid was learn music. He went on tour. He was taken on tour by his father, not as some kind of performing monkey, but so that he could see other musicians, see other venues, learn other languages. I mean, he had this 3.5-year tour as a child, which was really all about his musical education. And then they went to Italy to continue it. So part of it is that what they shared was they just focused entirely on being fantastic composers, fantastic musicians. I think also what was so impressive to me was, again, this whole thing about the context is absolutely essential for understanding. You know, who were their employers? Who were commissioning them? What else was happening? What was happening with Napoleon or happening with the Austro-Hungarian Empire? All those things are actually very significant. I think always luck plays a part. There are moments where these guys are just lucky. If you see the Beethoven film, you'll see a moment when Beethoven was extremely lucky because of Napoleon, and things could have been very different. So, you know, I take, you know, in a very small way, and, you know, I don't compare to these guys in any sense, but I take that kind of dedication to craft and passion about what one does in a creative field. You know, I think that is a lesson that we can still look to. I think it's also true to say that at the end of the day, there's something that you can't quite put your, you know, another individual with exactly the same upbringing and circumstances might not have been able to write the music in the way that they did. So there's always that little bit of mystery. But, I mean, these individuals are absolutely staggering. Even now when I watch the films, and I actually like watching them again, I'm still staggered by the music. If you think that Mozart and Beethoven wrote hundreds of pieces which are still, as we speak, being played on the radio, played in concert halls, it's absolutely incredible.
Philip Grabsky is a filmmaker. His films In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven and Leonardo Live are screening over the next few days at the Screen on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Not at all. I can't wait to be there in a few days. My first time to Santa Fe. I'm very much looking forward to it.
And Phil Grabsky will be at the Screen on the Santa Fe University of Art and Design campus on, let's see, Friday, tomorrow, for the double feature of In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven. And they're long films, so it's a marathon. Of course, people can go to one or possibly the other, too. But in any case, if you make a donation right now, you can get a pair of tickets to that. And or you can make a contribution to KSFR and get tickets to Leonardo Live, which is the Leonardo da Vinci program or film at the Screen, and that's on Saturday evening. So give a call, 428-1393, 428-1393, and do we have any reports from the control room at this point? No. 428-1393. So basically, ladies and gentlemen, we've got 5 minutes left here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and Peter Grendel had to run out. He had another commitment at 9, so he just left the building. But we want to thank the Screen for all that they do in this city. They do incredible work. What they do is they bring some of the best films in the country, or indeed in the world, to Santa Fe and make them available with a terrific sound system, comfortable seats, and a gigantic, great screen. And so they can do high definition, they can do any kind of film, and you get to see them if you make a contribution to KSFR right now and make a modest contribution. You can get a pair of tickets that can be used anytime this year. I think we do now have a report from the control room.
We do. The phones keep ringing. We're still only about halfway to your goal in 5 minutes. Maybe we can do that. But thanks to Brett Holiday.
Thank you, Brett.
And H.M. Aragon.
Thank you very much.
Barry.
Yay.
Virginia.
Thank you, thank you.
And several others.
All right, several others. And I know what several others means. Several other means that the people who are on the telephones are furiously filling out those forms and getting the reports ready for the people in the control room. It's quite a scene over there.
It really is.
At KSFR. Yeah, people, you know, here's what happens is that sometimes people very kindly donate food to us, and the volunteers sit in the room there where the telephones are, and they munch and they chat, and then the phones start ringing and they got to start working. So we like to get those pledge volunteers working. We've got a $1,000 goal for this hour, and that hour ends in 4 minutes. So let's give a call. If you like the Radio Cafe, if you don't like it, don't contribute. But if you like this show and you listen to it, then give a call and support this show. The reason we don't have commercials on this is because we are a public non-commercial radio station. And what that means is we have a very, very small amount of underwriting at the top and sometimes the bottom of the hour. But other than that, it is a non-commercial sound that you hear on KSFR. And if that means a lot to you and if that's what you like, then give a call and make a contribution, 428-1393, 428-1393, and support this non-commercial sound that you have on KSFR. We work very hard. I work very hard. We all do, to bring you the best radio that we possibly can. And we don't charge a subscription for it because that's not how radio works. Radio works as you buy a radio or you tune in your car and you get to just turn it on and listen to it. But we would love, I mean, if you want to do a voluntary subscription, just give us a certain amount per month. You can give anything from $10 or $15 to several hundred dollars per month, whatever you want. Some people give $10 to $15 as a monthly contribution, and that adds up. It actually makes a huge difference. Just as Peter Grendel was saying, that those extra $1 and $5 contributions by ticket buyers to the Screen saved the Screen. those small contributions to KSFR really save us. They really make this station stay on the air. And keeping KSFR on the air is what it's all about right now.
428-1393. I need to say, you need to do this for Mary Charlotte. She's talking about, you know, just small contributions, but she gives such a huge, you, Mary Charlotte, gives such a huge contribution to this station. And I know that, you know, you've been a little under the weather, and yet nobody on the air knows that. I know that, and I'm just amazed at how you rise to the occasion and really give your best and your all. And that deserves anything that our listeners can contribute right now.
Including a bottle of Dayquil. 428-1393. 428-1393 is the number here at the Santa Fe Baking Company. No, it's not the Santa Fe Baking Company. It's at the station. But I'm at the Santa Fe Baking Company. And we are so grateful for your support. And we're trying to make that $1,000 goal by the top of the hour, which is in just 2 minutes, just less than 2 minutes. So we may make it today. I hope we make it today.
We may make it because all of the phones are in use.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Yeah, because it means a lot to me. I mean, as I've said before, sometimes people come up to me, like, it makes me happy. Sometimes people recognize, if you do radio, like if you do TV, people stalk you. But if you do radio, they don't really know who you are, but sometimes they recognize your voice. And I've been in situations in public where somebody says, hey, don't I know you from the radio? And that makes me so happy. If you are listening right now and you like the show.
A couple phones are free.
Okay, here's the phone number. 428-1393. Let's tie up those free phones and get our volunteers really working. And not that they're lazy or anything like that. Oh, no. But let's get them working. 428-1393 is the number. We've got exactly 1 minute left before we go out. I'm going to give the toll-free number again, 866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. If you have one of those telephones that has a little numbers on the letters on the numbers, whatever. 428-1393 in the 505 area code is even easier. And Mary Lynn LeBlanc, I just want to again send a shout out to you for doing the amazing job that you do behind the scenes and on the air. And to all the staff of KSFR and all the volunteers at KSFR for the contributions that they make. It's a terrific public radio station. We love it. 428-1393 is the number. I'm out now. I will see you tomorrow with the legislative update and Speaking of the Arts. Hasta la vista.